Did you know that as you sit watching this video, that there are over 32 million people in the United States alone that are currently suffering with severe obesity? This means their BMI is 35 or higher, in many cases 40 or even 50. Now, you may be one of those people. And if so, you really want to stick around and enjoy this video until the end, because I have a special guest today, Amanda from Carnivorous Me. She has agreed to share her weight loss journey, and not just her weight loss journey, but her health improvement journey. And we're going to talk about her journey. I've got before pictures and during pictures, because these aren't after pictures, because Amanda ain't done yet. I can tell you that. So, and then also, I'm at the end of this video, I'm going to show you a list of all the chronic medical conditions that Amanda has either put into remission or reversed, whichever way you want to look at it. I don't care. I'm not offended either way, but you're going to be blown away by the list of things that she used to have that she currently no longer has anymore. And we're going to show the short list of things she does still suffer from. I suspect a few of those will also either go into remission or become so much improved that she doesn't even suffer from them anymore. So without any further ado, Amanda, welcome to the channel. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Barry. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you're not more happy than I am. I am so proud of what you've done so far. I love seeing you on Twitter fighting the tweet wars with people who think that the answer to severe obesity is to move more and eat less. And we're going to get into that and so many more topics today. We've got before and after, before and during pictures that we're going to share with Amanda's permission. And let me say this before we get started. Neither Amanda nor I are fat shaming. This is not about that. This is about improving your health. I used to be severely obese. Amanda used to be severely obese. We are not shaming you. We are telling you that it's not healthy to be severely obese. That is an objective fact. That's number one. Number two is that you can reverse your severe obesity by following the simple steps that Amanda and I are going to lay out for you as we go through this interview today. Amanda, tell us a little bit about your background and your story. And I really want to know, what was your motivation? What was it you said, that's it, damn it, I'm done?
So my background's actually in physical therapy. I don't practice anymore, just of my own choice, but for about 10 years, I've worked in hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and at last home health. I have actually worked in healthcare from the time I was 16. I kind of started off working with the therapist there, and then I went to college and then became one myself. Anyways, my journey started off as I was a normal kid, you know, not overweight. Then I had some childhood trauma happen, and no one in my family knew what had happened. And I learned to deal with my emotions by eating. My mom, I watched her be a size 4 and eat a bag of candy because she had a lot of things in her childhood happen. And that's how she learned to deal with it. So here I'm watching my mom do it. So I start doing it. And by the time I was about 12, I started gaining weight, and I gained, 10 to 20 pounds every year since then. I'd also been on antidepressants since then was the time I was 12 years old, or on and off. So I'm 33 now. So for the past 20 some years, I probably got around 200, 225 in my early 20s. I was still active. You know, when I was at university, I would bike 6 miles to and from. I didn't feel good though, because by the time I hit 18, I had started developing autoimmune issues, as well as I have a polycystic ovarian syndrome. So when I was 18 as well, I had to have my left ovary removed. I just had a lot of health stuff happen. And then, you know, life continued. I got married. I got more depressed because I'd experienced depression from pretty much ever since I can remember. And I just gained weight and more weight and more weight till by the time I was 32, I was 360 pounds, having to use a rollator walker. It's one of the walkers with the brakes in the seats, because I couldn't walk more than a few hundred feet at the time because of the shortness of breath from the exertion, as well as my severe back pain that I was having.
Yep. And I'm going to pull up some pictures here while we talk. Now, tell us about this is when you were 26. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so I'm guessing that the reason you took these two pictures then was because you had on in your mind, I'm going to lose some weight. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Yes. And so this was long before you decided to try the carnivore diet. What diet were you about to start right here? And then also, I want the full list of all the diets that you've tried that just didn't work long term for you.
I was starting paleo here. I've been very blessed that my husband has been always willing to jump on every diet we've ever done. And I ended up falling head first off of paleo. And then obviously I gained a lot more weight between that time and the time I was 32. So within the next 6 years of my life.
Yep. And what other diets have you tried that were just like, this is dumb?
I have been on a diet since I was 12, funny mm-hmm. enough. My mm-hmm. dad, and I'm not angry at him for this anymore in my life, he used to make my sister go in the bathroom and weigh with me because, and you know, he didn't know what was wrong with me. He didn't know why I was gaining weight. I was the only child, you know, gaining and getting overweight. So I've done things like Weight Watchers, the Whole 30, paleo, obviously, keto. I've done like whole organic veganism. My favorite worst one was I ate boiled white potatoes for only a few months. Like oh, wow. That is all I ate. My poor husband did that with me.
Poor guy. That's bad. Eating paleo with you, that's just being a good husband. But mm-hmm. if he ate nothing but boiled potatoes with you for a few months, then he's husband of the year material.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we did just pure calorie restriction. The one thing I always heard growing up, eat more, move less, eat more, move less. And so try the calorie restrictions. And that's the whole, like the Weight Watchers, you get the points that you can eat X, Y, Z. And none of it ever made me address that I am a binge eater. I am an emotional binge eater.
Yes.
And that's why the whole paleo and keto failed for me, because I found that I always try to remake those recipes. Like, oh, you want pizza? I'm going to make a keto pizza or whatever. And then eventually I just slowly fell off the wagon.
Yep, absolutely. And so, and this is not your heaviest weight in this picture. Mm-mm. I think that came in your early 30s, right?
So I want to say I was probably 265 there, something like that.
265 and had high mm-hmm. hopes for the paleo diet. But, and that's how I started as well, because I was 297 at my heaviest weight. I'm a little mm-hmm. bit taller than you, so that's not as bad, not mm-hmm. as unhealthy. But on paleo, man, the sweet potatoes and the quinoa and the hummus, honey, let me just tell you, I could put away some paleo food. And I did notice that my mental health got a little better on paleo. I wasn't as crotchety and angry all the time. I maybe had a little bit of body recomposition, but there's just too many carbs in paleo for somebody like me. And you, especially, you were using food as the only therapy that you knew, because your trauma happened when you were very young, and that's what you used to self-soothe with. And so let's see, our next picture here is, tell us about this picture.
That is 2 weeks after I had started carnivore. So I started carnivore June 20th, 2022. So 2 weeks after that, middle of July, I took these. This was some of the hardest pictures I've ever seen. I cried terribly after I took them. Yep. And I don't think I really, until I sent them to you, I haven't really looked at them.
Yeah. It's got to still be very emotional. Lori says, I can't imagine putting your fatness on display. You're so inspiring. And let me just thank you for sharing, because I know it's not easy. Even now that you've completely transformed yourself, this has got to still be painful to look at these pictures and remember, because you remember how you felt right at that moment, don't you?
Yeah, I probably shouldn't put a makeup on. I'm going to cry. Watch me. when I look at these pictures, all I think about is like, this is just the nitty gritty. At 360 pounds, I got to the point where I was struggling to wipe my own butt. Yep. Taking like hygienic care of myself, I had to have a loofah on a stick because like I had lost the range of motion. It's called soft tissue approximation. That's how the healthcare say you real fat and you have so much fat you can't touch, you know, parts of your body.
Right.
And I look at that and that's all I see is struggling. This is getting real into it. I remember having to go into the bathroom, having panic attacks if we went somewhere, because it's like, is the bathroom stall going to be small enough? Like I can use my own body weight so I can, you know, like reach. I mean, it just,
so you can kind of angle yourself and get your shoulder wedged so you can reach. Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I remember when I was at my biggest that I had to worry about certain situations, and like going on a plane flight was not fun at all. I could fit into the seat and I could extend the seatbelt all the way out. But buddy, let me just tell you, there was not a lot of playroom there. If I had waited a little longer to get started, I would have had to have asked for the extender. Now, is this the point in your life when you were having to use a walker? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. And so if you went over a 100 or 200 feet, you'd have to use a walker.
Yeah. I had to sit down. I had, go ahead.
How old were you here?
32. So this is literally middle of July last year, these pictures are from.
So you were effectively disabled, speaking just from a physical therapy angle.
Absolutely. I would have qualified for disability because my husband pretty much had become my caregiver to some degree. I mean, I could obviously feed myself, but he went and got the groceries. He did most of the cooking because I couldn't stand. My low back was in such bad shape that I couldn't stand to do the dishes literally more than a minute at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're filming this live in front of our private community right now, and they're able to ask Amanda questions. So if anybody in the tribe, if you have questions, type the word question in all caps and then ask your question for Amanda. And we're going to take questions from the private community members during this episode. So is this the point where you said enough? That's it. Damn it.
About 3 weeks before these pictures, a little bit less than that, probably.
What happened?
I'm going to go to the hospital. I better be dying kind of people. Cause I've seen it so much where people are like, they'll have indigestion. They call 911. Anyways, I woke up the morning of like the 20 something. It was a couple days before the 28th. And I was having this terrible lower quadrant, right abdominal pain. Like it was stabbing. And I told my husband, I'm like, I think I may need to go to the emergency room. So we loaded up, got in the car, got all the way to the front doors of the emergency room. And then the pain had subsided. And I'm like, nah, we're not going in there. It's fine. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it's trapped gas. I don't know.
Yeah.
And went home. Literally 30 minutes later, I was sobbing, crying. We actually called 911. And by the time they came, literally it was 20 minutes later. Thank God I wasn't dying. And they checked my blood sugars. They kind of just looked at me and you're super morbidly obese, whatever, you're fine. And they're like, there's nothing wrong with you, and left. Well, then I waited an hour and then it just got to the point where I couldn't take it. And by the time we had gotten back to the emergency room, they actually had to get a wheelchair because I just couldn't walk. And I've never been in such pain in my entire life. And the poor people in the emergency room were just listening to me wail. I didn't care who heard me scream. It hurt so bad. And it turns out I had a kidney stone. And funny enough, my mom has had a few in her life, and I just never imagined it could hurt as bad as it did. And the emergency room doctor told me that they can actually be more painful than giving birth.
100%. And that's one of the few conditions that I've had female patients tell me that hurt worse than natural childbirth. And if a woman's willing to say that, you don't want that. So I totally believe that you were in 10 out of 10 ungodly pain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm one of these because, in the medical field, it's tell me your pain on a scale of 0 to 10. And me, it's like, if you say 5 or 6 or higher, you better be crying at least a little bit.
Yep.
And I was just sobbing. They gave me the drugs and stuff to help. And I just remember looking over at my husband, he was absolutely just concern and worry on his face. And just in those moments of looking at him, and I realized, okay, we've been married 7 years last year, and he's spent 7 years of almost hell. I mean, obviously he loves me and we've had good times, but 7 years of just watching me just literally spiral down, and there's nothing he could have done to stop me.
Yeah.
And in those moments, that's when it clicked. It's like, I got myself here. And it wasn't blame or in a negative way. It's just like every choice that I have made in my life got me sitting in this bed.
Yeah. How much guilt do you feel about that looking back now?
I don't. I mean, I can't say I don't feel any, But because I still work with this on myself, as I still do feel like every pound on me, it's like years of guilt and shame. But now I look back on it, it's like, you know, I made those choices and no amount of shame or guilt can change it. It's already done. It's already in the past. Absolutely. And that shame is just what led me to always wanting to eat because I felt so bad.
Because that had taken you down a bad road a long time ago. Oh, yeah. So why go down that road again?
I totally get it.
Okay, we've got a few questions. Do you mind if we take a few?
Nope, go for it.
Okay, all right. This is B. Rose. She says, would there have been anything other than the hospitalization that could have made you take this step? What else could have happened in your life that you were like, that's it?
I had already, I think a month prior to that, had done carnivore for a couple weeks and then fallen off. I know I would have eventually fallen into carnivore if I had not died before then, because I was in such bad physical shape. I mean, my diabetes was out of control, but also mental shape to the point where I would wake up every morning and tell my husband, I wish I hadn't woken up.
Man, that's a rough place to be in. Mm-hmm. And like I said at the beginning, 32 million people in the United States alone currently have severe obesity. And I bet they have those same kind of feelings pretty often. Allison says her 16-year-old daughter wants to know, what did you do? What do you do when you have a craving? How do you fight that?
I do a couple things. The first thing I have discovered for myself is when a craving is happening, it is 99.9% emotional based. So I actually have a journal that I sit down, or it's either use a journal or talk to my husband, but I'll use the journal and I'll sit down and self-assess what is actually behind the craving. And it's always like I'm stressed or some kind of emotional upset. So like, let's say I have one of my dogs died a couple months ago, but my other older dog, she's not doing so hot. So I get, you know, stressed about her. And so I'll write down like, okay, I'm stressed because Ryu isn't doing well today. And then I write a reasonable response of, okay, does this stress, what can I do right now to help that? If they're, you know, either give her pain medicine and drugs, or if there isn't anything I can do, what is the stress doing? It's doing absolutely nothing. And that reasonable response usually resolves it. If that doesn't, then I like using Redmond's salt crystal to suck on. I actually really like that thing.
Yep. That's a great hack. Nisha and I have both used that hack when we were first starting. You're craving something sweet, either a pinch of Redmond salt on your tongue, or if you've got one of the salt crystals, that's super sexy right off the bat, just to have a salt crystal.
Yeah.
And then to lick that or suck on that, 99% of the time, the craving just goes completely away.
Yeah.
Paul wants to know, have you had any stalls in loss of pounds and or inches? And then I've got a follow-up question for that. Go ahead.
I have. I actually show all of my, I haven't updated it in 2 weeks, but I've tracked all my weight and shared all my blood work and stuff on my website, thecarnivorousme.com. And you can see on there, like in the beginning, it's just like down. And then I think at one point I gained a pound and then like lost 2 pounds the next week. And so I've had a few times where I have stalled for weeks. I think there was a period of like 6 weeks that I didn't really lose anything. But I have noticed, even though the weight isn't going down, my clothes are getting looser. And so that, I think that's a big thing, is focusing on that. I was so sick. I started this with 16 comorbidities. Like I was on the verge of death. My body has spent 32 years being unhealthy. I can't expect, and now we're at almost 11 months next week, that it's going to all repair in the blink of an eye. It needs time to adjust.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, my question is, since you've been on carnivore, hardcore, full-time carnivore this time, have you cheated? And let me just say, I love your honesty and your openness, being able to share your pictures and stuff. And a lot of people think, if I cheat, that's it. I'm a loser. I'm done. I fail again. Tell us, have you cheated? And if so, then what was your next thought and what happened the next day?
Yeah, I absolutely have. I have been very honest with people. I have not been perfect on this journey. I made it, I want to say at least 3 months without any cheats. And then just my thing is, the smallest upset used to, like, just my world would spin. You know, my husband would go, and then I'd be like, what's wrong? Oh my God, are we going to be homeless? And all he did was huff. it. And so my threshold of stress was extremely low. It got better. And, you know, the one thing that I really held fast to, and it lasted until 8 months, is I had none of my binge food, which is like sugar and cakes. And the thing that I discovered is it's very hard in the beginning because we do want to do this perfectionist mode, which, by the way, nobody's perfect, no matter how much they might not tell you. They aren't. I'm not. I slowly discovered over months, realizing that I can't ever be perfect, no matter how much I try. And if I had like one off carnivore meal, I ensured the next one was on, that I wasn't going to allow this cycle to continue. I fell, get back up and keep moving. And it's back to the, it happened in the past, 5 seconds ago, 5 minutes ago. I cannot change that. I can only change my choices moving forward.
No, that's perfect. And I think that's an excellent strategy for everybody. And I think that's one of the tips, is we're all human. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we say that in a apologetic tone, but I like to say that I think we should brag about that. I'm human, damn it. But we're all human. We make mistakes and we trip and fall, and that's totally fine. That doesn't, that's no reflection on your self-worth. That happens to every single human on the planet. But what you don't do is let the pattern come back. And so you immediately after that cheat, you would break the pattern and say, nope, the very next meal is going to be 100% clean carnivore. And then how did that help you? Of course, you're eating good food, but then how did breaking that, not letting that become a cycle again, how did that help you going forward?
The biggest impact, I think, doing that is I have been able to, like, what stresses me out now is 10 miles higher than what it used to be. I made it 8 months, and I've never made it more than, honestly, a week or two without binging in my entire life. Yep. I made it 8 months, and then I had my one binge, and it lasted 11 days, and it's because I call her my soul dog, Rosie. She died. She had a medical emergency and died.
Right.
And that was hard. It took my favorite dog dying to induce a binge, when before it would be the smallest little hiccup.
Yep.
And something that I think is vital to know is if I had not been on carnivore and she had died, I would have died. Like, I would have just given up on life and died probably within a matter of weeks, because I just would have quit.
I don't doubt that. So let's go back in time, a year, 3 years, 5 years. What would be something that would set you off? Like, give us an example, if you can think of one. Like, yeah, this thing happened, and then for the next however long, I binged on the cakes and cookies and pies.
Yeah. We can go 5 years back, easy peasy. Seeing patients. Physical therapy, it's usually the patients were great. It was the family just yelling at me. I've had them curse at me. You couldn't even imagine some of the stuff you see in healthcare. And that would just, it would just put me in such a foul mood that I would just go and binge for a couple of days, you know, like cake, make me feel better. I'm feeling stressed. Honestly, the smallest thing, my husband and I started our own small business. And I mean, it's hard and rough in the beginning anyways. And just, if anything went wrong, we're signing a contract with a new company and something fell through, it's like, oh, we're going to be homeless. Let me go eat some cake, which makes no sense because I'm spending money when I'm worried about money.
Right. Right. I don't think binging as a solution ever makes sense, but yet millions of us do that in the heat of the moment, because that is the coping mechanism that we learned in many cases when we were very, very young. Many people who are severely obese, their mom would literally comfort them with cake or cookies.
Yeah.
And that was her love language. She was showing them love, but what she didn't understand was she was literally setting them up for that to be their safety valve forever. And it's not a very safe safety valve.
I'm curious, those individuals that had, like, the grandmothers and mothers that did that, was their grandmother and mother, was their, like, support mechanism food? So then they just passed it on to their kids as well, because it made them feel better. So it should make you feel better.
Absolutely. I think in many cases that what we think of as our family tradition or our family culture, it's literally just what your mom and grandmama did. And in many cases, they did that out of pathological reasons, although it was well-intentioned and they loved you and would give their life for you. That was pathology. They had learned that very early. You self-soothe with cookies, cakes, and pies. And therefore, if that helps me feel better, then of course I'm going to give my little Amanda, she fell and scraped her knee, I'm going to help her feel better with this cake. And that,
yeah,
it's disheartening that human parents can be so naive and believe that Pillsbury and Betty Crocker, that's something I should always have in the pantry, because you never know when we might need a cake. And I think that they think of it that way. We might need a cake in this house if something bad happens. And it leads to such devastating disease, but they don't know better. They mean well, but they don't know better. And that sometimes is a very dangerous, dangerous combination. Tell us what was going on with this picture right here.
I think I was 4 weeks into carnivore. Yeah, that was like a 4 week update there. God, I was, even though I'm a lot fatter than I am now there, man, I was feeling so much better.
Sure.
I had stopped. I think at one point the longest I'd gone is like 3.5 months without going outside. And I mean going out the front door, going outside. And at that point, I had started trying to go outside and walk.
Yep.
And I was taking my walker with me down the street. And
so at this point, you were taking your walker with you and walking down the street in your neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. At 32 years mm-hmm. of age.
Oh, man, that was some of the most embarrassing. I had that walker probably for about a year. And for about 6 months, I wouldn't even take it out. I just stopped going out because I was so friggin' embarrassed about it.
Yeah, and there are many, many people who have to use a walker or a rollator, as you know from your experience mm-hmm. in physical therapy. They're very handy for people oh, yeah. and with certain medical conditions. They need that. But obviously, at 32 years of age, you should not have needed a walker, and yet no. you did. Now, here's a good question. When you started carnivore, did you find yourself gaining while on carnivore? Because that happens to a lot of women when they go carnivore. Did you have that where you gained 5, 10, 20 pounds and then the weight loss started, or did that not happen to you?
That didn't happen for me. But this is what I tell people. I was having severe edema in my lower extremities, so in my legs, where I was having pitting edema in, like, I mean, the best way you can check is push your thumb right in the front of your shin and hold it for a few seconds.
How bad was it, Amanda? I had so much
fluid on me.
How bad was your pitting edema? What was it?
Oh, God. It was like a grade 2.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I mean, it was bad. And yeah. to the point where I couldn't sit more than like an hour, or I had cankles. You could no longer see my ankle at all. It was just so much fluid would get down there. I ended up having to buy men's extra wide sandals, adjustable top, both tops and around, because my feet were swelling so bad. So in the beginning, I lost 15 pounds in like 9 days, but it was mostly fluid. Don't get me wrong. 15 yep. pounds is still 15 pounds in my eyes, but I had a ton of fluid on my body that just disappeared when I started carnivore.
Yeah. Tina wants to thank you. She weighed 350 when she started. She's only 5 feet tall, and you, Amanda, kept her motivated watching.
Oh, thanks, Tina. That is amazing. You just keep going step by step.
Absolutely. What made you, what psychotic part in your brain, Amanda, before, right, when you decided to go carnivore, where in the world did you get the motivation and the idea, I'm going to share this with the entire world. I'm going to take these very uncomfortable pictures of myself and I'm going to post them. Why did you do that?
I used to get my why, like what motivated me in life was seeing patients for physical therapy. I absolutely adored being able to help a patient, especially neurological based stroke patients, go from literally not being able to roll out of bed to teaching them how to walk again. But I slowly lost that through just the bureaucratic red tape and everything. And it occurred to me I'd lost my why in life. And then I just realized, I had this voice just come to me one day and I was like, you should do this. Because here's the thing. I had no social media, none before I started this.
What? Never. You didn't,
no,
you didn't
have no a Facebook, Instagram, Instagram, no Twitter. No. I didn't even have a YouTube account that I used to watch YouTube videos.
Wow.
And so I just like had this like voice come to me and just be like, you know what? There's a reason everything happens in life, even if we don't understand it. And I realized all the pain and suffering that I've gone through in my life, I could share that and share the hope that the other people out there, the people that are even, 500 pounds and bed bound, no matter how far you've fallen, you can get up. It will be slow. It's not going to be quick, but through persistence and tiny little steps forward, you can do it. And that is what motivated me. It gave me my why back in life.
Yeah. Your story is so inspirational. I would encourage everybody watching this, even if you're not severely obese yourself, if you know someone in your family, a friend, your neighbor across the street, might they be offended if you share this video with them? Yeah, they might be, but also they might be hungry, not for cake, cookies, and pie, but they might be hungry for a solution. They may be looking for a role model like this one right here. They may thank you more than you would ever imagine for you sharing this video with them. So what do you think about that? Would that be offensive? If somebody 3 years ago had shared, literally went into the future, grabbed your videos from YouTube and sent you a link and said, Amanda, you really need to watch this girl named Amanda because you remind me a lot of her. Would that have been offensive, or would you have been like, thank you? Or how would that have played out?
I don't think I would have been offended. I think I would have been motivated, specifically because something that I realized is I stopped believing in myself like way long ago. Like I don't have split personality, but there's like a part of me that got so angry at myself. It became that like mean, bitter, resentful voice. Yep. Having one person believe that I could do it, man, that's just enough. And the thing that I realized too is I don't care if you're 500 pounds stuck in the bed, you absolutely can do this. Yes. It will be hard and difficult and it's not easy, but you are a human being and the human spirit is amazing. And I absolutely believe in every single one of you.
Absolutely. And my criteria is if you can still fog a mirror with your breath, then you can start this journey. You are still an athlete. I don't care how old you are. I don't care if you weigh 800 pounds. Your body will respond when you start feeding it a proper human diet, the right food. And when you start avoiding the pseudo food, highly processed crap that we're taught on television and in magazines every day, that is food. That's not really food. And if you make that one change alone, your body's going to start to respond. Okay. Yeah. And so speaking of a body responding, tell us what's going on in these two pictures.
We all know at this point I have had to use a walker. I was hardly walking a couple hundred feet. On the left side, maybe your guys is right, left side there. My husband and I had just finished playing racquetball and I played tennis all throughout high school. That was amazing. It's amazing being able to go and do that. And then the picture on the right, so those pants were the pants I was busting out of. Those were size 26 pants, and I was barely able to button them when I started this. And that's from 10 months. My 10 months.
10 months. This is 10 months into carnivore. And so many weight loss gurus out there, they intimate that exercise is a mandatory part of the weight loss journey. But I didn't see many pictures of you exercising at all early in your weight loss journey. And I also had thousands of people who are like, because as a family doctor, if I see somebody 500 pounds, if I tell them to go join the gym and start jogging on the treadmill, you in physical therapy, you're shaking your head like, that's a torn ACL, that's torn cartilage, that's a torn Achilles tendon. No, you do not need to exercise if you're 400, 500, 600, 700 pounds. You exercise plays no role in the initial stage of your weight loss. Do you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. My exercise was I started standing at the kitchen sink as long as I could physically tolerate, profusely, and I mean profusely, like someone dumped a bucket of water on my head, sweating, doing dishes. And yep. I did something like that every single day, just moving around my house. Cause when you are that heavy, that is like running a marathon almost. Absolutely. But it's these ADLs, these activities of daily living. Not only do they physically help you right? They help strengthen your joints and everything because they're low impact, but it's a mental, it's like, it's the biggest serotonin dopamine high you can get when you're doing these small things that you have been ignoring or physically couldn't do. I still don't see that I exercise technically, because to me, exercise is I'm going to the gym to go burn 30 minutes of calories on the elliptical.
Right.
I play racquetball because I love playing it and it's fun. Is it physical exercise? Yeah. But I don't go to the gym to do it because it's exercise. I don't hike now because it's exercise. I do it because I love and enjoy doing it.
So would it be safe to say that when you had lost enough weight to make it relatively safe, and also I would opine that you had reduced inflammation enough in your joints and in your back and in your brain, that you almost just, you re-remembered that childhood feeling of, I'd like to go outside and play. Because it sounds like that's what you're doing, Amanda. You're going outside and playing.
That's actually very well said. That's what we do, is we play. I don't even think I can properly articulate how much I dreaded to walk even inside our house, just to like go, my poor husband. I haven't changed it yet, but he was saved as Igor in my phone. Not that I love him. I don't take that as derogatory, but he would go get me stuff all the time because just going up and down the stairs, I'd be winded. My knees would hurt so much. Yep. All of that went away. And it's like, I actually want to be about life. I want to be in life. I would literally cry when he'd suggest to go walk because the idea of the pain and the suffering and the exhaustion.
Yep.
Now it's like, okay, it's 9 o'clock at night. Let's go take the dog for like a short walk. I want to do it. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah. And I know it's got to be, from your perspective, it's got to feel a little bit nuts, because this thing that you literally dreaded. And I want you to walk us through that. Let's go back in time. Let's go back 3 years, and you're sitting on the couch and you've got to go upstairs and get something. Walk us through what you're thinking, what you experience. I want you to give us a play by play, because this is really for all the health and fitness gurus out there, who I would really love to for them to shut the hell up at people who are severely obese. When you're saying, well, you just need to get up off the couch and you just need to do some exercise. Walk us through this, Amanda. How does it feel mentally and physically at that weight, when you would have to do something?
Oh, man, I would have had to have whatever I was going to go get, because if it was not like urgent, I'm not going to get it. Like, because here's the thing. I would sit on the couch, and at that point, I had gotten so big, I lost the ability to flex at my hips forward to stand up, like how people normally stand up. I actually had to do this where you push your shoulders against the back, scoot your butt forward, and then use my arms to leverage myself forward, because it was a lot of effort to stand, a lot of effort. And then, of course, the whole, you got to like rock, because I was so big, I couldn't get my weight over my feet, and exhausting. Moving just constantly reminded me how terrible it was to be alive. And then just the grueling pain in my knees, my hips, my back, absolutely my back, just to go up the stairs. Going up the stairs was like climbing Mount Everest. And at the top of it, so short of breath, I couldn't let go of the handrail because I was about to pass out. I was just breathing so hard. God, my heart rate was probably like 160 going up a flight of stairs. And this is something, because on the physical therapy side of it, you know, we work with people at their bottom, whether it's surgery, whether you're bed bound. And then I do see people that are like, you just need to get up and exercise. And it's just like, nah, you guys, the personal trainers and stuff, you guys, you have absolutely no idea how low the low is. And you're trying to my 600 pound life, or these like massive weight loss shows, they're having them run. And I'm like, oh my God, their knees, they're just going to be shot within 3 weeks.
Yep.
It is not about exercise.
Yeah. Me as a family doc, and her from the physical therapy, when we see you make somebody who's 500, 600, 700 pounds do jumping jacks or run on a treadmill, that's literally number one, torture for that person at that moment in time. But secondly, it's medically, physically very, very dangerous. But so many people have been deluded, even including people who are very, very large. They think that, oh, I've got to do that. That's mandatory. I mean, Biggest Loser. That's all they did was run on the treadmill. That must be mandatory. And so I love it that you make it so clear that early in the weight loss process, exercise serves no role whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's actually dangerous. And this is basically two people from the healthcare telling you if you're over 400 pounds, especially if you're not very tall, exercise plays no role. Exercise is only going to get you hurt. You're going to tear a muscle. You're going to tear a ligament, a tendon. Something bad's going to happen. You're going to blow out a knee. You're going to throw your back out. Do not do that. What do you say, Amanda?
Especially the jumping. I have a bulging disc in my low back, and that's from an injury with a patient years and years ago. Just the shock on the spine to be jumping or anything like that, just don't do it. Mm-hmm. If you're a female and you're in the upper 200 pounds, don't do it.
I totally agree. Totally agree. But so often that's exactly what they're pushed to do, and they feel guilty if they don't do it. And so they wind up doing it, and they wind up on the couch because they've hurt themselves, and now they're in pain, even more pain. And so
the bag of potato chips because they feel like a failure.
There you go. So you are not a failure if you cannot exercise at this point, because I promise you, I had this experience and so did Amanda. When you've lost enough weight and when you've lowered your levels of inflammation enough, when you've peed off all the excess fluid that you've been holding, your edema gets better through diuresis, there's going to come a day when you're going to want to go outside and play. I did the same thing and Amanda did the same thing, and you'll do the same thing too, I promise, but it's not time for that yet. That is not part of what you're doing right now. Right now, you're fixing your diet. You're losing the stored fat, you're lowering the inflammation, you're improving your mental health, and at some point, you'll want to go outside and play, and then you can do that within reason. Please don't overdo it, okay? Because your body's been sedentary for a lot of years. Okay, next pictures, Amanda. Tell us what's going on. Oh, there you are outside playing.
Yeah, so you can see Rosie, the big black lab. That was 2 days before she died, so that was about 8 months in. That was the longest hike I had done. We went 6.5 miles, and that was half uphill, half downhill. And it was the absolute best.
Yeah.
And she was 12. So, you know, she had a bilateral hip dysplasia too. I was so dang proud of her. My God. I mean, I was proud of all of us, to be honest.
Absolutely. That had to have been a great day. If I could go back in time 5 years and show this picture to Amanda from the past and say, do you believe that one day in the future you will walk 6 miles, not because somebody has a gun to your head, but because you wanted to and you will enjoy every minute of it? What would old Amanda have said to that?
Whoever made that picture was good at Photoshop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly how I would have felt at my heaviest too. It's like, yeah, you're good at CGI because that's never going to happen. Now, yeah. Next up, I have a list. I have two lists, and this is a list I promised everybody at the start of this video. So before Amanda started her carnivore weight loss journey, she suffered from 16 different, these all have ICD-10 codes. These are classified as medical diseases. So let's go through this list and let's talk about how quickly each one responded, which one didn't respond as quickly. And because, you know, hundreds of millions of people around the world suffer from at least one of these and perhaps more than one.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go through this list. So you started the carnivore diet. How many months has it been now?
It will be on the 28th. It'll be 11 months.
11 months. So 10 and a half months ago, you started and you had every condition listed on the left. And currently, you only have those on the right. So let's go through this list on the left, and let's talk about these conditions and how you reverse them.
Yeah, let's do it. So I was a type 2 diabetic. I had not been diagnosed maybe 4 years, although I will say through my entire 20s, I was pre-diabetic because I'd get hypoglycemic all the time. My A1C was, I think it was like 7.1, and I was taking oral metformin. I was not having to take any insulin or anything like that, although I was well on my way there because I was having blood sugar spikes up into the 300s at times towards the end there. And that took me, I want to say somewhere between like 4.5-5 months. I was like, oh, I'm feeling real good because I monitored my glucose every single day. Right. And by 6 months, I have reversed my type 2 diabetes. And I don't mean it's in remission. I am no longer a type 2 diabetic. Like the off carnivore meals that I've had in that 11-day binge, the highest my blood sugar got when right after Rosie died was, I think, 123.
Wow.
And it would have been above 400 with what I had been eating.
So your type 2 diabetes is cured.
Yeah,
I think we can definitively say that because when you were binging with the cake, you would have been back up at least over 200 blood sugar wise. So you completely fixed that problem.
Yep. Yep. I could pass a 5-hour glucose test without any issues.
Yes. And so would you categorize type 2 diabetes? Is that just a dietary disease of carbohydrate excess?
Yes. Type 2. Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 100%. What about metabolic syndrome?
Metabolic syndrome is just a catch-all when you're super fat and super sick.
Yes, absolutely.
It's usually you have at least three of them for metabolic syndrome. The only thing I have is still technically I'm still considered morbidly obese because I was 360 and now I'm at 245 or 244, excuse me. I will say upon this, my BMI, because I'm 5'5" was 59.6 when I started this. And my BMI, do what?
59.6. That was your highest BMI.
Yes, yes, yes.
Can anybody currently beat this? That you don't have to put it in the comments, but if you can beat that, then that's you also can follow in Amanda's footsteps and improve that.
Yeah. I'm at 39.7 or something now. So I still have I still have a ways to go.
Sure.
But I mean, that was like 60% of my body was fat at that point. And when I started.
And so technically you're still morbidly or severely obese at this point, and that's why I said earlier, these are not before and after pictures. These are before and during pictures because Amanda is not done yet. I can promise you that.
I think I dropped two categories of morbid obesity because people have gotten fatter. So they've redone the categories and I was like considered like class 3 and now I'm class 1.
Yep. That's a huge victory. I love that. Yeah. Now you've got a couple of conditions that people don't typically associate with being obese, scleroderma and fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis. Yeah. These are autoimmune conditions or idiopathic conditions. How can you even imply that losing weight made these conditions get much, much better or go completely away?
Because, I mean, autoimmune is about inflammation and the body attacking itself. And if you have oodles of inflammation, I mean, no wonder it's just going to go crazy. Now, my thing is I don't know if I will ever be able to completely get rid of them. But if they can halt and not have symptoms, I don't care. You know, I started having these symptoms when I was young. I remember I was 18 when I first went to the doctor. I was probably like 180 pounds then, some give or take something. And I remember him laughing in my face when I told him I felt like an 80-year-old woman. Like my hands hurt so bad. I was just in so much pain. It actually took me like 8 years to finally get all the diagnoses. Part of it was they came out with better blood tests to specify.
Yeah.
But man, it is night and day difference. It gotten to the point with like the scare. Because when you have more than one autoimmune, you really don't know when one starts and the other stops. So they all kind of like merge into each other. But it had gotten to the point too, and this is where my depression really got bad in my later 20s, is I wasn't able to do like a lot of manual therapy with patients and things like that because my hands hurt so bad. And then using the computer, just being able to cut things, oh man, my hands, my knees, my hips, my joints, everything ached. Like the fatigue with the fibromyalgia, I mean, the nodules I'd get on my hands and things from the RA, it was devastating in my 20s to be going through that.
And if you think about it, knee pain, ankle pain, lower back pain, I can understand how people would say, well, you're just really fat, Amanda. Of course your joints are going to hurt. But, you know, finger joints, they don't really support a lot of weight, and hand joints and wrist joints. I mean, unless you're doing fingertip push-ups, which you're not, then your fingers are not supporting any weight at all. So why were her finger joints hurting so bad and were so inflamed? And so stiff. You can't explain that with her being severely obese. That does not cut it.
Mm-mm, no. And I mean, I had terrible elbow and shoulder pain. And the number one thing that used to bug me the most and that was the most painful is I would just have this hypersensitivity to where like just the air blowing on my skin, it'd be like fire, like, and it would be nonstop. My clothes touching my skin would just absolutely be excruciatingly painful. And all of that, I had Raynaud's phenomenon. So literally my fingers would just literally random fingers at times would just absolutely turn white. Blood flow would be cut off. And that's quite painful when it comes back. All of that is gone. I have not had any hypersensitivity in, I want to say probably within a few months of starting carnivore, that disappeared.
That's amazing. What about the sleep apnea? Millions of people suffer from sleep apnea. And in, I'd say 90 to 95% of the cases, they have fatty tongue and fatty neck from being morbidly obese or severely obese. Tell us about your sleep apnea story.
I couldn't sleep on my back. And because the way my back, the shape it was in, I needed to sleep on my back. It would be so bad. My husband said it sounded like just like, you know, 500 pound man snoring next to him. My sleep was absolute trash. And then the sleep apnea kind of rolled into the GERD because what would happen is the gastrointestinal reflux, I would try to lay on my back and then I would like vomit in my sleep. Like, you know, I'd have reflux and then I would aspirate on it. So it'd go down into my lungs and then my airway would close up, try in a protective mechanism. And I would stop being able to breathe. I'd sit up at the edge of the bed and like, I can't breathe, having this panic attack that I'm literally suffocating to death. And that happened a couple times most nights. And let me tell you, that is the scariest thing, is waking up and not being able to actually make your own body breathe. The sleep apnea was just absolute crap. We ended up having to buy a bed that articulates up so I could sit and sleep at a 45 degree angle, which actually made my back hurt all the time because I never got any pressure relief from it. And I couldn't lay on my side because I was so overweight. It would bother my shoulders and it was a hot mess. That gone 6 weeks. No joke.
6 weeks, I mean, sleep apnea was gone. And then I suspect that the GERD was about that same time period. Yeah, 6 weeks. Yeah. And that's classically what I hear from people who get dead serious about carnivore. B. Rose says, how did you stay motivated early on to continue? Like the first few weeks, what was your why? What was your motivation to just not give up? And then what motivates you now?
I realized like in the hospital, I kept telling my husband I wanted to, like, I wish I didn't wake up and things like this. And I realized I didn't actually want to die. As much as I had let myself turn into this just victim, poor me, my life is terrible, you know, I've gone through all these traumas and all this stuff, I realized I didn't actually want to die. Yeah. And that was, and the big thing was realizing that the choices I made had got me there. And a lot of people take this as a shame thing, like you shouldn't shame yourself. It's not shame, because if the choices I made got me where I was at, that means I have the power to make different choices to get me where I want to go. And that was like a huge empowering moment for me, that my choices have consequences, but I have the ability to choose whatever.
Yes.
And what motivates me now, oh man, it's like a snowball. You start off really small and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it just turns into an avalanche. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I look back, because it's only been, you know, a little bit less than 11 months. And I see that Amanda, that depressed, sad, on the verge of, you know, just falling off the abyss, not wanting to live, Amanda. And that is not who I was, not who I am today. And through all of this, I found who I am as a person. I am comfortable. It doesn't matter that I still have like 95 more pounds I want to lose. I am comfortable in who I am today in my own skin.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that feels greater than that, than being secure in who you are and doing this. That's what motivates me, is to continue forward. Plus, honestly, my whole why of helping people. If my journey only helps 10 people in this world, I mean, that's enough for me. That's it.
Absolutely. If every single human on the planet can just help 10 other people, we'd all get helped, wouldn't we? And I want to say one more thing about what you were just saying. People who've never been in the situation, they may not understand what I'm about to say, but I think Amanda will understand it. Wanting to die is a different thing from just not wanting to live. And being actively suicidal, that's a different thing. But just literally not enjoying your life, not even caring if tomorrow comes, I don't want to go on like this. That's a different thing. But I think it's bad, maybe equally as bad. And it can be just as disabling, because when you feel that way, I don't care if I live. I don't want to keep living. I'm not saying I'm actively planning my suicide. I'm saying I just don't give a damn about the tomorrow, about the next minute, about the next week. That's very disempowering. I mean, it takes all of the wind out of your sails as far as the future, for plans, for dreams, for hopes, for goals. None of that stuff means a damn thing when you just feel like I don't care if I live or not.
Yeah. I actually had gotten to the point where this is my only saving grace. And this is why I say, even if something hurts and we don't understand it, then things happen. The only reason I did not actually go through with committing suicide is when I was living in Minneapolis. I worked at the hospital there, and I had this patient, and she was 45, something like that. She had tried to commit suicide with a shotgun to the chest, and she'd failed.
Wow.
And she just had pellets all in her. And I just remember treating her and thinking, good God, what the rest of her life is going to look like, because, you know, it impaled all of her organs. She now had a bag because her intestines were just perforated. And I just remember, that's what it looks like to fail. I've had patients who shot themselves in the head and they just gave themselves traumatic brain injuries. That is the only thing that kept me from doing it, is the fact that I could fail.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, yeah. I was there. Like, I just would imagine not like actually doing it, but I could never bring myself. And that's why I told my husband, I was so disappointed when I woke up in the morning.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that.
I mean, this is more my opinion, but I think especially with the massively morbidly obese people, if I look back on it, I was trying to commit slow suicide by just eating.
Have you thought about that? Was it just a slow suicide of negligence? Like, I'll just keep doing this because obviously I can't go on like this for much longer. So this is going to get the job done without the shotgun effectively.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I was probably months away from just honestly my body giving up on me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you made that decision, because the world would be a much, much less awesome place without you in it. Let's talk about the rest of your conditions here. The hypertriglyceridemia, that's high triglycerides. I'm guessing that corrected itself in six to 12 weeks. The rosacea, they may confuse a lot of people. I also have rosacea, or had rosacea. Now on carnivore, I haven't had a single flare in what, four and a half years now. How bad was your rosacea, and how is it now?
I have type 1 because there's all sorts of types. So I never had any of the pustules or the breakouts or anything like that. What it's done is created spider veins. And so mine's just more cosmetic, and it used to make me really, really flushed. And now you can't really see it. Sometimes it's worse than others. But my cheeks, I have the spider veins and a little bit here. It has not progressed at all, and it's not as red. But fundamentally, the fact that I have the type 1 with the spider veins, unless I get laser treatments, there's nothing that can be done because it's already damaged it.
Right.
But carnivore has kept it from getting any worse, which is good.
Exactly. And then the fatty liver, I'm sure, was 6 to 12 weeks. It was gone. Peripheral edema, 3 to 9 weeks. It was gone. Right. Now, let's talk about number 13 and 14, because the majority of humans on the planet do not associate depression and anxiety with your diet. They would argue with you and say, you're an idiot, that your diet has nothing to do with whether you're depressed or anxious or not. Explain to those people how they might need to rethink that.
If our bodies are inflamed, why would the brains not be inflamed as well? And what we eat, we are what we eat, right? The old saying, we are what we eat. And if you're eating junk, you're going to feel like junk. So why aren't you going to think you're junk? I mean, it's that simple. Carnivore opened up the space to take that dark rain cloud away from my head so I could actually deal with what was going on. Carnivore did not solve my, what was causing the depression per se. It gave me the space to be able to self-assess and look at it where I didn't have that before.
Yes. And do you feel like that was a literal biochemical, biological change in your brain processes? Or do you think that you just were happier because you lost some weight and therefore your depression lifted?
No, it was definitely chemical. I feel like if you had taken my brain out and looked at it before carnivore and then after, the level of inflammation would have been just night and day difference. And yeah, losing weight, it's great, but it's being able to do the small things, like being able to be about life and do things that really, I think, helped immensely with the depression and the anxiety.
Yep. And now let's look at your after list. You still are technically severely obese. You've lost 116 pounds and you've got what you said, what, 95 to go before that's your goal. Mm-hmm. Still, you've got the scleroderma, but the symptoms are much less severe. The flare-ups are less severe. The fibromyalgia, do you still have an occasional flare?
Every once in a while, but I will say between the scleroderma, fibromyalgia, and RA, it is 90% better. But here's the thing. I still have 95 pounds to go. I am still overweight. So I do imagine there's still some inflammation just from the excess weight on me that still has, you know, got to go.
Yeah. And anybody out there with scleroderma, fibromyalgia, or rheumatoid arthritis, just imagine if your symptoms were 90 to 95% better. How huge of a great day would that be? How much of a victory? I mean, and so she can't technically say my RA is cured, my fibromyalgia is cured, but it's 95% better. Just imagine how happy that would make you if you were able to say that as well. I just had somebody said that this was probably the best interview that I've ever done in my life. And that means I must not have talked much. You did all the talking. Here's Rebecca. You're helping way more than 10 people, Amanda. You are amazing. Tamara said, yeah, this is probably my favorite interview by far, because I interviewed some of the leading individuals in the world, thought leaders on health, nutrition, weight loss, disease. But I feel like this interview has the potential to literally help millions of people all around the world, not just people who are severely obese, but people with this list of befores. Read this list of befores, people, and then the list of afters. And she's not done yet, okay? This is before and during. This is not an after yet, because I also predict, Amanda, I agree with you 100%. I think when you've lost the remaining 95 pounds of unneeded body fat, I think that you're going to be hard pressed. You'll still be left with your spider veins from your type 1 rosacea. You're going to have that. Those are not going to go away. But I predict everything else is going to be literally in remission, reversed, or completely gone. You're not going to have any fibro symptoms whatsoever. You're not going to have any scleroderma symptoms or RA symptoms whatsoever. That's my prediction. And we'll see in another 10 or 12 months whether I'm correct or not. What do you think?
I actually ended up switching rheumatologists. I will be very curious, because they're doing, when you switch, they want to redo all your panels and stuff. I'm very curious to see, because my last panels were done 14 months ago, something like that, with this new one, to see if there's any changes in my numbers in just this 10 months. I get it done, I think, next month. And I mean, I obviously will always share that with everybody too. It'll be very interesting to see if there's any improvements in that.
Yes.
As well as, I think next month, no, the end of this month before we go on the cruise, I have a cardiologist I see, despite not having cardiac problems. That was what my PCP sent me to. I've been following up with him. I'm doing all his cardiac stuff again. So we'll see the big changes in that too.
I cannot wait to see those results. And I know that you'll share them with all of your viewers. And so I have linked to all of Amanda's links down in the show notes. And I hope that Amanda is working on a book about this journey. I think that would be a very wise idea, Amanda. Just a thought.
I honestly probably will. I've been really good about journaling, because something that I've realized is once we get past our journey, we forget so much. And I'm actually very glad that I did this, because I can go back. If you guys are interested, talk about the fatty tongue. I didn't mention this, but if you listen to my voice in my first few videos, I sound very different.
Yes.
And actually, I had a speech therapist tell me this, and that was because of the fatty tongue. Yeah. My voice was actually very different because of the amount of fat just on my tongue and around my throat and things.
Absolutely. Amanda, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for stepping outside your comfort zone and sharing photographs and sharing lists and sharing information and stories that I know they're painful to even look back and talk about that. But thank you so much for doing that. You are indeed one of the people that's making the world a better place by doing what you're doing each and every day. I encourage everybody watching this to follow Amanda all over social media. She really is really good at Twitter. And she every now and then has a hater pop up on Twitter, and I love how she handles that. I follow her on Twitter, and you should too. Amanda, any parting words, any final words? Let's just imagine that we're talking to someone right now, laying in a bed or on a couch, on a sofa, that they don't have the energy to commit suicide. They have no intent. They have no desire to live another day. They're done. They've lost their entire life. They're a loser. They've failed over and over and over. They're a failure. You know how that feels. You were there. Yeah, it's fine because they need to hear the real deal. They need to hear the real emotion. Talk to this person.
No matter how far you think you have fallen, no matter what, you are not alone. Even if there's people, you have nobody around you, there are people like me that are rooting for you. You can do this. How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? A lot of times it can seem so overwhelming to make such drastic changes, but it takes one step at a time, one literal step at a time. And in my 11 months, I had no idea I'd go from a walker to where I'm at. You might go faster, you might go slower. It doesn't actually matter. You have the power, and every single human life is precious. Because here's the thing. I never expected to have an impact on the world. A year ago, if you would have asked me, would I be sitting here? I'd say, heck no. But you yourself might have the biggest impact that you have no idea you're going to make until you take the actions. So whatever you do, don't give up. It is so hard and difficult, and the journey is difficult, but you can absolutely do it.
I don't need to add anything to that. Thank you so much, Amanda. Thanks for everybody for joining us. Thanks to our tribe members for asking very, very good questions. Amanda, you are a superstar. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right. Well said. Bye-bye, guys.